Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, you're here with your host, LaVon. Not so happy Friday. There's an ongoing tragedy in Paris. We're going to talk about that. I'm getting some background noise here. I apologize. Where's that ad coming from? Okay. Sorry about that, guys. Go away, advertisement. So, thank you for joining me on the Anti-Media Radio. Well, we are happy to be here on UCY.TV. It's our home. We're very pleased to share with you the news Monday through Friday between 8 and 9 p.m. Pacific time. And we do our best to share with you unbiased, real news from around the world. And on Friday, I try and wrap up the week's news, as well as encourage you guys to practical things you can do at home to better you as well as your community as a result. So just things that we can keep in our mind to not feel overwhelmed or defeated, because life is tough, and we call it life school. Life school's not easy. So hopefully you guys can enjoy this hour with me despite all the controversy in the world currently. I'm going to start off the news with saying that there is ongoing terror attack. There was an ongoing terror attack in France. We reported not long ago that there was over 100 people that have been killed, and most recently I read that since that time, people have been apprehended. But let me find the updated story for you guys here. So I am live if you guys want to give me a call tonight and talk about the things we're going to discuss. The number is 1-718-717-8296. Another really important story that we're going to speak on is mandatory vaccines. I've been doing research for a while, and there's a lot of scary things in regards to Senate Bill 277, and parents are running out of time to obtain an exemption that will grandfather them in so that their child doesn't have to be inoculated with 69 federally mandated vaccines throughout the course of their education. And if you don't comply, you have to move out of state. You have to attend homeschool with no class time. Or you have to get the vaccines, basically. So those are parents' options. Or they can homeschool. Oh, I said that already. Apologies. So I want to tell you guys what's going on here in Paris. Let's look at the most updated story. So we'll start what was reported about 7 hours ago, okay? So at the beginning of this attack, French police, this is a story from Mick, and they say French police said that at least 140 people were killed and dozens were wounded in a series of attacks at least seven locations in Paris, including shootings at several restaurants and cafes in the city Friday night. At least 100 people were killed inside Paris Le Bataclan Music Hall after terrorists stormed the theater, taking concertgoers hostage and systematically killing them. Another at least 40 people died in attacks throughout the city. A shooting occurred at the Le Petit Cambodge restaurant in the city's 10th district. At the same time, there were reports of an explosion at a bar near Stade de France. Please pardon my French. I only took 2 years, like 10 years ago. An explosion could be heard clearly during the soccer match between France and Germany. And if you guys go to mick.com, there's a video there. I'm going to try and play it for you guys so you can hear the sound, okay? Check it out. I don't know if you guys could hear that. Here it goes again. So, pretty loud explosion. And everybody just kind of stops dead in their tracks, like, what? And there's more videos if you guys want to check it out on there. Everyone was outside on the terrace of the restaurant when all of a sudden we saw these masked men start firing in all directions at witness outside La Petite. Le Petit, we'll just call it that. Le Petit restaurant told the BBC it felt like it lasted a long time. Another shooting erupted a few minutes later near the Bataclan Club, according to Libertarian, which is reporting live from the scene. Liberation, I'm sorry. Three explosions were heard simultaneously, Liberation reported. A group of foreign students who were at the Carillon Bar, where another shooting occurred during the attack, told Liberation afterwards that they first saw one or two cars approach before the shots fired. Pardon me. Ooh, hello. Another witness told Liberation that someone shouted, Allah Akbar, before opening fire in the street outside the bar. The attackers then entered the bar and began firing at the people of the bar, according to the witness's account. The foreign student told Liberation he witnessed his friend die in front of him. Another friend shot in the leg, another in the back. It was unclear at first how these incidents were related. So there's a lot of screenshots circulating with people's updates from their Twitters. It's hard to say what's going on. It's horrible, and it really is sad. And as an objective individual, I do feel empathy for these people, but it makes me wonder what's going to happen globally as a result. I mean, look what happened globally after our quote-unquote terrorist attack, and that's just one example. So I just urge people just to be on, not afraid, but just be more aware of what's going on around the world. This article goes on to say that President Barack Obama made a statement from the White House to underscore the United States' support for France and to condemn the people involved in the terrorist attacks. France is our oldest ally, he said. French people have stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States time and time again. Paris itself represents the timeless values of human progress. Those who think they can terrorize the people of France and the values they stand for are wrong. It's been reported that the borders at the time were being shut down. So that's the first story. Let's go on here. So I believe at this time, all of the attackers have been apprehended, and there have been 140 plus people that have been injured or killed. And from what I understand, all the attackers, two are no longer living. I'm just curious what you guys think about this. How do you feel? And like me, are you wondering what will be a result globally? So call me if you'd like. It's 1-718-717-8296. I'd love to hear from you guys. Let's see here. I'm trying to get to this other article. Give me just a second. So, I got some clarification that there have been a mutual assault on the terrorists, they're calling them, by police forces. So we'll just have to kind of sit back and see what's going on, which is kind of scary, just being on eggshells. But that's it's no nothing new. This type of thing exists in our culture, right? So let's see here. Got a lot of news to cover, you guys, besides this developing story here. Something we posted today that you might find interest in regards to the war on drugs is that in Oregon, there are now more marijuana shops than Starbucks or McDonald's. So, we published this article by John Vibes today. And he goes to say that in Portland, Oregon, in the United States, in the state, I'm sorry, in Portland, Oregon, where marijuana for recreational purposes was legalized just over a month ago, there are already more retail marijuana shops than there are McDonald's or Starbucks. According to Oregon's Health Authority, there are 281 marijuana businesses in the state due to the fact that there was already a vast network of medical dispensaries there. When legalization kicked in, these dispensaries were able to quickly repurpose themselves as retail outlets. This allowed the industry to grow much quicker in Oregon than it did in Colorado or Washington. In Oregon, there were over 250 medical marijuana dispensaries that were immediately able to sell to recreational customers, while in Colorado, there were just 24 retailers open the first day of legalization, and Washington had only four. In fact, in Oregon, the cannabis industry is already becoming as visible as major fast food corporations, with more locations in the state than both Starbucks and McDonald's. They have 248 and 205 locations, respectively. It is important to mention that many different businesses and owners make up the 281 marijuana shops across the state. While Starbucks and McDonald's are individual businesses, for example, the total number of marijuana shops are not being compared to the total number of fast food or coffee shops, but to specific fast food and coffee corporations. However, it still shows how marijuana is quickly becoming a very important part of the economy and pop culture. According to Business Insider, Oregon already has the second highest number of medical marijuana patients, running close behind Colorado. The state sold over $11 million worth of marijuana in the first week of legalization. The sales in Oregon in the first week actually outshined both Colorado and Washington. In Colorado, sales reached nearly 5 million in the first week, while Washington retailers made just 2 million, and that's in the first week of sales. As with the retail locations in Colorado and Washington, many of Oregon's shops are concentrated in cities like Portland, with only a few locations, excuse me, in rural areas. And there goes my voice. Now, I need water just a moment. In Colorado, sales reached nearly 5 million in the first week, while Washington retailers made just 2 million. I already read that. The growing marijuana industry is not only extremely lucrative, but it is also a more gender equal environment than many other businesses. Gender equal environment than many other businesses. As we reported last month, there were more female executives in the marijuana industry than there are in any other industry. So that's exciting. Go Oregon. $11 million in the first week of legalization. Pretty cool. I'd be interested to see if prescription medications like significantly drop over the next few years in the states that either use medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. It's a good reporting there, John. That's a really good story. What do you guys think about that? I mean, how do you think that's going to benefit the economy? I'm pretty excited. Oh man, what's going on? Something's going on with my computer here. So the next story is scary. We've been reporting on this for a while now, and I don't know much about the topic, But I'm gonna mention it to you guys so that you feel inclined to check it out. Here's what the media won't tell you about the 2016 NDAA. So Mr. Derek Brose wrote this today. We published it, and I'll read to you. Let me know how you feel if you care, okay? The annual military budget has been approved by U.S. lawmakers and is expected to be signed by President Obama, but what are we not being told? On Tuesday, the U.S. Senate approved the latest version of the National Defense Authorization Act for 2016, voting 91-3 last week. The Senate approved the revision bill, which includes $607 billion in defense spending as well as $5 billion in cuts. So, let me repeat that. $607 billion in defense, as well as $5 billion in cuts. The bill then passed the U.S. House of Representatives. Obama vetoed the previous version of the bill because it would have limited the transfer of detainees from the military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to the United States. However, the new version of the bill retained provisions which will likely prevent Obama from keeping his promise to close Guantanamo. While House spokesman Josh Earnest said he expects the president to sign the bill, stating, "That certainly does not reflect a change in our position or the intensity of our position about the need to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay." I'm not going to say that it's been, like several years since he's been saying that. Not going to say that. So Obama also battled Republicans not over-limiting the military budget and focusing on domestic programs, but over whether they were raising defense spending limits high enough. When you look closer at Obama's actions, you see he is actually voting in line with the rest of the war hawks. He is not demanding military budget cuts, nor that the United States begin winding down the global American empire. In fact, President Obama is simply asking for yet more money to continue to launch wars of aggression based on lies and fear. Many of you may remember that President Obama had no problem signing the NDAA 2012, which legalized the indefinite detention of American citizens suspected of ties to terrorism. It should be noted that the indefinite detention provision is still contained in the NDAA and has been approved by Congress and signed by President Obama every year. So, for 3 years consecutively since it first passed. So, what's hiding in the latest version? The current version of the NDAA will continue to ensure United States involvement in the conflict in eastern Ukraine by offering lethal aid to Ukraine's fighting Russia in Crimea. Section 1250 of the Senate version, titled Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, oh my goodness, and will authorize $300 million to provide appropriate security assistance and intelligence support, including training, equipment, and logistics support, supplies, and services to military and other security forces of the government of Ukraine. The same section also grants funds for lethal assistance such as anti-armor weapon systems, mortars, crew-served weapons and ammunition, grenade launchers and ammunition, and small arms and ammunition. Some of the weapon types the U.S. is offering Ukraine could include counter-artillery radars, including medium-range and long-range counter-artillery radars that can detect and locate range artillery, unmanned aerial tactical surveillance systems, and cyber capabilities. So this sounds really fun. Let's see here. Derek goes on to say that Ukraine will not be the only recipient of weapons funded by United States taxpayers. The U.S. Congress is happy to continue supporting conflict in Syria by funding so-called moderate rebels who are allegedly fighting against Syrian President Bashar Assad. All signs indicate the Syrian civil war has become another U.S.-led proxy war against Russia. So, if you guys want to follow this, you guys can check out theantimedia.org. That article was titled, "Here's What the Media Won't Tell You About the 2016 NDAA." So, if you guys haven't heard about that, it's just an example of Senate bills that get passed with quickly, rather. that quite sinister without the consent or mass attention from the people. So, let's see here. I wanted to read to you guys a couple more stories, and then I wanted to talk to you specifically about Senate Bill 277, because, like the NDAA and many others that we report on, they're not the greatest. Let's see. Here's another example, okay? So we posted this story today. It's really, really interesting to consider, okay? It's literally the new frontier. This article is titled "Senate Quietly Passes Bipartisan Bill to Allow Conquest of Space." So, Deirdre, I'm sorry, I'm horrible with names. Fulton published this yesterday. Okay, so here we go. In a bipartisan bid to encourage commercial exploitation of outer space, the U.S. Senate this week unanimously passed the Space Act of 2015, which grants U.S. citizens or corporations the right to legally claim non-living natural resources, including water and minerals mined in the final frontier. Woo! Sorry, not sorry. So the legislation described by IGN's Jenna Pitcher as a celestial finders keepers law could be a direct affront to international treaties that bars nations from owning property in space. The bill will now be sent back to the House of Representatives, which is expected to approve the changes, and then on to President Barack Obama for his anticipated signature. Pitcher continues. The new Space Act allows ventures to keep and sell any natural resources mined on planets, asteroids, and other celestial bodies. Commercial operations could reap trillions of dollars from mining precious metals like plutonium, common metallic elements such as iron, and water, the oil of space. The vote was celebrated by the Google-backed asteroid mining company, Planetary Resources, which lobbied hard for the legislation and says the market is in space is ripe to bloom. Basically, we've already capitalized on this planet. We've got to branch out. Planetary Resources President and Chief Engineer Chris Lewicki added, throughout history, governments have spurred growth in few frontiers by instituting sensible legislation. Long ago, the Homestead Act of 1862 advocated for the search of gold and timber, and today, H.R. 2262 fuels a new company that will open many avenues for the continual growth and prosperity of humanity. This off-planet economy, he said, will forever change our lives for the better here on Earth. Sounds better in Captain Picard's voice, huh? Anyway, but there could be a snag. Along with Britain, France, and Russia, the U.S. is signatory to the 1967 Outer Space Treaty, which reads in part, outer space, including the moon and other celestial bodies, is not subject to national appropriation by claim of sovereignty, which means of use or occupation or by any other means. Yeah, I like that. How about that apply to people too? As Wired noted on Thursday, well, technically we're made of outer space. That's an argument there. As Wired noted on Thursday, handing out the right to exploit chunks of space to your citizens sound very much like a claim of sovereignty, despite the Space Act's direct statement that the United States does not thereby assert sovereignty or sovereign or exclusive rights or jurisdiction over or the ownership of any celestial body. Well, I'm a celestial body, damn it. On the other hand, Congress is saying to these companies, go get these rights and we'll defend you. And at the same time, they're saying, we're making no sovereign claim of ownership. Okay, yeah, that's backwards land. That's where we live. So they're trying to dance around the issue. tend to think it doesn't create any rights. He said of U.S. lawmakers, and this is space lawyer Michael Linster. Hey, imagine if you were a space lawyer. So the bottom line is, before you can give somebody the right to harvest resources, you have to have ownership. So that's pretty cool. That article originally appeared on commondreams.org, and it is really awesome. I encourage you guys to check it out further if you're interested. Just an example of the things that get passed in our government, kind of unbeknownst to us. And that's why we are here reading you the news, so that you know and share it with people that you know and love. What the hey? There's some really interesting stories. I'm trying to figure out which one. Gosh, you guys. So I'll briefly read over. I don't even want to give this my attention. But I will briefly read over the story that I think is really important. The message of this story is important. It's titled, Five Stories the Media Missed While Obsessing Over the Starbucks Red Cup. So if you were breathing any time this last week, you're aware that there's this whole fiasco over this cup for whatever reason, and it's damn silly. And you know us, we like to point out the silly. So this is by Miss Claire Burnish. In United States Incorporated, when billionaire presidential hopeful Donald Trump inexplicably decided this week that boycotting Starbucks over the de-Christmasization of their ubiquitous red holiday coffee cup was somehow a matter of national importance, the internet exploded. And American mainstream media fanned the flames. People from every conceivable walk of life suddenly found themselves with a reason to rise up against the establishment coffee chain and scream in indignation about this newly neutral, and cheerlessly Grinchified affront to humanity. As if this inane insanity over innocuous paper cup weren't an embarrassing enough commentary on the U.S. populace's lack of priorities. By Wednesday morning, the corporatocracy ever so nobly answered the outrage. Dunkin' Donuts unveiled its decidedly cheerful, appropriately Christmasized version of its holiday cup. Yes, indeed. Starbucks' apparent war on Christmas has now fully morphed into a de facto corporate battle of the paper cups. People immediately responded by declaring their undying allegiance to either Team Grinch or Team Santa, conveniently ignoring the fact that these mega corporations just figured out their most lucrative holiday marketing strategies. Weeks before Thanksgiving even crossed people's minds. But the passion these warring coffee cups factions have managed to muster is indisputably misplaced, especially considered the bevy of pertinent issues that directly affect us all and are inherently more deserving of outrage. Though this month isn't yet halfway behind us, there are already myriad concerns in need of your immediate attention. And none have anything whatsoever to do with a commercialized holiday that is still well over a month away. Here are five things exponentially more deserving of your indignation than a paper cup, no matter its design or lack thereof. Number one, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Perhaps nothing Perhaps nothing encapsulates the sickening intrusion of crony capitalism into our personal affairs more than the insidious, notorious TPP, which was dubbed the corporate power grab of the century, even before the full text was released this week by the White House. At stake with this trade pact between the U.S. and 11 other countries is an economic coup that will drive 40% of the world's GDP at the expense of civilians worldwide. First, the White House arbitrarily bumped Malaysia, a country that notoriously turns a blind eye to human slavery and sex trafficking, even of young children, from a Tier 3 worst violator of human rights to a Tier 2, all in order to ensure strategically important membership in the TPP. Then President Obama signed Fast Track into law, literally eliminating the possibility that Congress could amend or change anything in the enormous piece of legislation by forcing a simple up or down vote when the laughably mockering free trade deal reaches the floor for a vote. After years of tight-lipped negotiations by the 12 nations, during which time congressmen were denied access to the text unless they literally sat alone in a basement room where even note-taking was strictly forbidden, the full complete text released this week rather astonishingly confirmed and amplified our worst fears. In fact, as Evan Greer, The Fight for the Future, warned, if U.S. Congress signs this agreement, despite its blatant corruption, they'll be signing a death warrant for the open internet and putting the future of free speech in peril. And that's only one section of this multi-thousand-page monstrosity. We suggest everyone who is able form study groups and tackle each session to get a firm grasp on the peril, which now seems destined for a collective future. Organized by category, the full text may be viewed via the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative here. So if you go to antimedia.org and go to 5 stories the media missed while obsessing over the Starbucks whatever, you can find that link. Oh, the TPP pisses me off to no extent. I've been talking about it for 2 years since we heard about it. And it's F-U-C-K-R-E. It just is. It's horrendous. It makes me sick and it makes me upset. And if we got that PO'd about a damn cup, what could we do about preserving our freedoms? Having our ability to use the internet and having our ability and safe access to food, to know where our food comes from, whether or not it's grown here and shipped somewhere else to process. There's so many aspects that are just creepy, creepy, creepy. So if you haven't heard anything I said tonight, TPP, just check it out, okay? So number two on this list is the Syrian imbroglio. After repeatedly, even exhaustively, insisting he would not do so, President Obama recently announced the deployment of ground forces into Syria and then magnified that hypocrisy by announcing the U.S. would increase airstrikes in the war-weary nation. This military buildup, which is incidentally also slated for Iraq, had first been proffered as necessary to assist the ongoing international fight against the Islamic State in the region. But in order to do so, Obama admitted that buildup would function to ensure that weapons and other supplies are delivered to the moderate forces whom the United States supports. As an unnamed and unified official told Reuters, additionally, a report quietly confirmed Syrian rebel groups had employed chemical weapons in the region. Though who exactly those rebel groups were and whether or not they are fighting at the behest of the U.S. remains unknown or unstated. U.S. State Department veteran and Middle East policy critic Peter Van Buren pointed to a similar mission and announcement in 2014, August, concerning Iraq. Touted as brief, ostensibly humanitarian effort that was widely believed, though, as it turned out, was a lie, concerning the deployment to Syria. He advised, we are being told that the same president that Americans will fight on the ground will again fight on the ground in Syria and that Americans will have to die. He says this is necessary to protect us because if we do not defeat the Islamic State over there, they will come over here to what we now call without shame or irony, the homeland. Though the official announcement claims only 50 combat troops will be deployed, there may still be time to voice opposition to further involvement by contacting your congressman. And again, that link is there in that article. The United States shot at victims fleeing You know, you guys, we've been reporting on the hospital. It turns out the United States victims fleeing the Sans Frontieres hospital bombing in Kunduz, Afghanistan, despite mass media's provocativity for accepting spoon-fed propaganda from anonymous government officials, as evidence in its insistence immediately followed the tragic bombing of the hospital, that it had indeed been accidental. Doctors Without Borders recently released a tellingly contrary report based on eyewitness accounts of the October incident, with descriptions of a plane shooting at victims, as well as the immediate aftermath of the bombing so plainly stated, they brought tears to our eyes. It did. It did bring tears to our eyes. Here at the anti-media, the MSF report, which summarizes preliminary conclusions of an investigation into possible war crimes, justifiably pleaded for a clear commitment to the act of providing medical care that will never make us a target. No organization so unwaveringly committed to providing medical attention to any person who needs it, irrespectively of national or group loyalty, should ever find itself in a position of needing to pose the question, much less live through the reality of what can now clearly be called a targeted strike. It's hard to say because it's so freaking outrageous. After the Pentagon repeatedly switched its official story in the days following the bombing, yes, really, making it apparent its need to figure out which story would be best believed by an apathetic populace, the report made clear the scope of the war crime committed in the bombing. We need to know whether the rules of war still apply, stated the report. It's an increasingly pertinent question whose answers seem shamefully obvious, especially when it was reported a U.S. ally somehow managed to bomb accidentally a second MSF facility in Yemen. Okay, so bulk metadata, this is number 4, collection by the NSA officially halted. Yay! So on Monday, Washington, D.C. District Court Judge Richard Leon nailed the coffin shut on the NSA's bulk data collection and did so in a most eloquent smackdown that thoroughly derided the agency's hollow claims it needs the program to continue the dubious fight against terrorism. Edward Snowden, who blew off the lid of the secret insidious practice 2 years ago, immediately took to Twitter to voice his approval to millions of fans. He even highlighted passages of note taken directly from the ruling. This court simply cannot and will not allow the government to trump the Constitution merely because it suits the exigencies of the movement, Leon stated in his opinion. Moved by whatever monetary evil has aroused, evil has aroused their fears. Officials, perhaps even supported by a majority of citizens, may be tempted to conduct searches that sacrifice the liberty of each citizen to assuage the perceived evil. To be sure, the very purpose of the Fourth Amendment would be undermined were this court to defer to Congress' determination that individual liberty should be sacrificed to better combat today's evil. Drops mic. Oh, man. So this was really hard. Two police officers shot a 6-year-old autistic boy 5 times, killing him on purpose. This is the most disturbing thing I've ever seen, Louisiana Police Superintendent Colonel Mike Edmondson said flatly about officers' body camera footage at a press conference announcing the arrest of two cops involved in the shooting. Questions mounted after 6-year-old Jeremy Martis and his father, Christopher Few, were inexplicably pursued and shot 18 rounds pierced the driver's side door by 4 officers. After the two arrests, a rumored personal vendetta was confirmed with the revelation that one of the officers involved had been relentlessly stalking Few's fiancée. A second rumor that Few had his hands in the air at the time of he and his son were shot and was also confirmed. The pair of officers is currently being held on $1 million bond and have both been charged with second degree and attempted second degree murder. You know what's the saddest thing about that story is the other day I heard that Jeremy Martis was in a coma and that he has no idea that his son died. Isn't that just the most terrible thing? Like, if this poor man wakes up, and if he has capacity to comprehend clearly without severe damage, because I'm pretty sure he was shot in the head. Don't quote me, but can you imagine having to hear, like, your son died? By the way, you missed his funeral. That's terrible. I mean, how is that father going to feel? And it's disgusting. I don't know how many times we've reported on this, but there's clearly an issue. Something needs to change. So that was that. Now hurry up and get back to that battle over those coffee cups, says Claire. But seriously, guys, like you gotta realize a pattern here. That was hard for me to read. Like that literally was hard. This has been a tough night of news. There's a lot going on in the world. And I want to read one more story before I give you guys the pep talk for the week to get you through. Okay. So this is something that I'm working on. That's really important to me. And would like to share it with you. And I briefly touched on it earlier, and that's Senate Bill 277, which was signed by Governor Jerry Brown. Let me give you the exact date here. Do-do-do. Just a moment. So, I want to clear up some words just because I'm going to use the word parent and I'm going to use the word doctor. And the word parent in this situation means to protect or to guard. And the word doctor in this context means to teach. The word doctor actually means to teach, and that's how I'm going to use it. Okay? So, let's talk about this. California's parents, all of them, are running out of time to decide whether or not they are relocating out of state, homeschooling with no class time, or forcefully inoculating their children with 69 doses of federally mandated vaccines. As of June 30th, 2015, Governor Brown initiated the law following the more than 4,000 whooping cough cases that erupted in California in early 2015. Let's see here. Senate Bill 277 requires that developing people entering free education in public or private preschool, transitional kindergarten, and seventh grade to be fully vaccinated in accordance with the schedule. Prior to this new requirement, parents had the bizarre ability to actually decide what immunizations their children would receive. Some even had the exemption, I'm sorry, they even had the option to a personal belief exemption. So what's scary about Senate Bill 277 is that if you're opposed to this in any manner, you got to act quickly, because this bill will eliminate all exemption. If you go online and if you search for personal belief exemption, or you can even write your own letter of affidavit by the end of the year. And if you do so, you will enroll your child into the grandfather clause that will be valid by law at your school and to the end of 2015, and will also be valid until the next checkpoint. The grandfather clause will exempt children from the mandatory vaccinations who are entering childcare or preschool and kindergarten by June of 2016, and children within the checkpoint grade spans of TK/K, so preschool through 6th grade or 7th grade through 12th grade. After this year, there are virtually no exemptions regardless of your child's health condition. In his article, Dr. Mercola goes into article about what ailments will not be sufficient to grant exemption. Here are the only acceptable endurances that warrant a temporary until recovered exemption, according to the doctor. Basically, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now tell doctors that a medical vaccine exemption should only be granted if you are one of the estimated 320,000 children and adults annually receiving chemotherapy, or one of the estimated 47,000 Americans who have a recent organ or blood cell transplant, or your child is one of the 40 to 100 children born every year with severe combined immune deficiency known as SCID. So those are the only people who get exemptions, and they're being called golden tickets because there's not a very high chance that you'll receive one, even if you really, really want it. Maybe if we understood how important and relatively simple tailored preventative measures towards being healthy are, could we essentially eliminate unnecessary vaccines? Maybe they are not a one-size-fits-all. So science versus government. To forcefully vaccinate those who have immune systems is not only unsupported by science, but according to nature and the manner in which bodies operate, completely unnecessary. There's this little aspect of us, the kind, you know, it's the first thing we develop in the womb, our nervous system. It has one job. It communicates all tasks and duties from the brain to all portions of the body. Your personal army resides within you, microscopic yet mighty, just waiting to attack any invader that seems suspicious. They diligently and faithfully guard all invisible borders, protecting all barriers within your fleshy vessel. If we maintain our systems and think progressively in regards to chosen fuel, we get optimal function. Supporting this notion of immunity being related to many factors, not just pathogens, as demonstrated by Dr. Mercola, that is why malnourished, vitamin-deficient children living in impoverished environments, for example, are at higher risk for complications from gastrointestinal, respiratory, and other childhood infections. So basically what he's saying is that people who are not sanitary, don't support their immune systems and healthy habits, are more likely to get diseases and conditions based on that. So my argument is that we're not thinking preventatively as a whole. We're thinking allopathically. We're segmenting the body into pieces instead of thinking it as a whole holistic unit. And it's causing a lot of disruption, especially in our community. People are torn, just like, Democrats and Republicans. People can't agree on what's right or wrong. And it's not my job or anybody else's job to tell you what's right or wrong for you. And that's the main point. SB 2277 is a blatant removal of your personal right and sovereignty as an individual to choose your health care. And what's scary, crazy, crazy, scary, scary, scary is that pharmaceutical companies and doctors are protected by law, by your government, from any type of legal action, despite knowing that the thing they are requiring to be administered is not safe nor guaranteed. So they're giving everybody a blanket treatment. And it's really scary because the eradication of disease is just not injecting someone with the virus. It's there's so many things, like for example, germs are like seeds, and this will help you guys understand that, a seed will only grow. I mean, it can sprout even. It can sprout in a and you can plant it in a not so ideal environment, like poor soil. And it won't continue to grow, it'll die. So if you get exposed to germs, say I have the flu, and you come hang out with me, you may be really, really healthy and have a strong immune system to the point that maybe you do contact that germ, but it doesn't affect you on a super negative level. Like you're able to fight it off. Maybe you feel kind of, oh, sorry. You're welcome. That's contagious. So maybe you feel down for like, I don't know, 20 hours or so, but your buddy who drinks a lot and smokes a lot and doesn't sleep very much, he contacts the same virus and say homeboy's sick for like 4 days. And that's just a demonstration of how everybody's immune system is different. And I'm really not a fan of freaking blanket treating anything because everything is situational and there's so many factors that go into health, everything from environment to stress to food quality to water to air quality to posture and muscle tonicity and you name it. There are so many factors, and a lot of people have immune disorders that make them susceptible to having adverse reactions to vaccines. So, oh my goodness, we've had so many topics tonight, you guys. It's been a very, very busy week in the world. We talked about all kinds of things that are going on. Our hearts and our prayers go out to, I'm not going to segregate. In this instance, I will use a blanket statement and say, everybody, every being, I wish you so much peace. I'm here to remind you that life is school, and the moment is the lesson, and that's the reason things happen, it's for you to pay attention. So, are you paying attention? Because that's for you. The moment's for you, it's not for anybody but you. And collectively, we create these moments that shape us all simultaneously. But the trick is, are you paying attention? And not just that, what are you going to do with it once you're aware? So I made you guys aware of so many topics tonight. And I'm sorry to tell you so many depressing things, but just know that as much evil, there must also be that much good. And that's in everybody. So it just depends on what you're gonna channel. I like to take all the bad news from the week and learn from it and analyze situations and think about an objective perspective, an entire picture. Not to alarm anybody, but just look back in history. Any time a large attack happened like this on a very, what's the best word? Idolized place. A lot of people cherish Paris and have many, many fond memories. And besides that, there's a lot of politics involved, especially because the United States supports Paris. And we've also been experiencing lots of quote unquote terrorist attacks. I think, honestly, that there's going to be a global push to remove the guns from the hands of man other than government and police. And no matter what, I don't think that's okay. Not even a little bit. You don't give up your right to hold and bear arms. Ever, 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 ever. I don't give two shits what anyone tells you. Instead, educate people on how to use them. Have a massive training program. This is America. You should make this the strongest, most forceful army. If every American, every adult at 25 and older was just trained on how to properly use a weapon and respect it, imagine, like, would we even need a military? I don't know. These are things I like to imagine. But thank you so much, guys, for joining me. As I told you before, we've been on UCY for quite some time now, and we're being broadcasted Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific time, 11 p.m. Eastern time. And we are very excited, as I said. So check out UCY.TV because we are not the only people who have a radio show on this network, believe it or not. There's people from around the clock. Oh, that reminds me. I got a special guest coming into town, Mr. Liam Sheff. He is a host of Liam Sheff Show here on UCY.TV. He is super awesome. Make sure you guys check out his work. He puts together the entire picture, from permaculture to history to nutrition and relationships, social interactions, and he really has some interesting views on sexuality and monogamy and even polygamy. So he's coming into town, and him and I are going to do some educational events throughout the city and turn the love on, not off. In regards to motivating people to get out in the community and actively work towards their community and their sustainability, not only collectively but individually, because ultimately, if you love yourself a whole la 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 lot, you can share that love a whole la 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 lot. So share what you have. Hopefully, it's love on, not off. Catch you guys on Monday. Enjoy the week. Bye. Levon is out, but not off. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let him know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.